This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Text line's open for you at 343-0106, 343-0106. I got a question here we can run on the text line. We're about to hop on the phone with District 101 Representative Chris Pringle is going to talk with us for a little bit. But I thought about this when I said I was over, I won't even say where. I was somewhere not too far from the radio station, and I had gone by a bank, and I could see across the fairly open parking lot a nail salon. Okay, and they had their open sign on. Now, I've following the stories from down in Orange Beach and the barbershop here in Mobile as well that opened and had been shut back down. But I saw this nail salon had an open sign on. So even though I really did not have the time to do it, I drove over there and looked just to check it out. And it looked like they were closed. Maybe had a good sense of humor to leave their open sign on there while they were closed, like the neon sign. But what about that when we go to in some level of reopening, like we talked about with Congressman Byrne? Will you, I'd like to hear from you on the text line at 343-0106, will you reward or punish those people? What about people that would open up before the official opening? Would you patronize those places? Would you hear about it and then maybe down the road go there or not go there based on that? Or does it have any bearing in your decision making? Will you reward or punish those businesses that open maybe in a civil disobedience move now before it opens or early on in the opening? What will you do? I'd love to hear from you. All right. Welcome to the show. Back to the show. District 101 Rep. Chris Pringle. Hey.
Hey, Sean. Good to be with you. Coming to you live from the big city of Sims Chapel, Alabama.
Oh, man. You're up in the country, man. I am yeah. Jealous. I am a beautiful day to be up there. Hopefully, I can be in the woods by this weekend. All right. I want to talk a lot with you about the state level and the perspective, number one, on reopening Alabama, right? So the governor is asking for opinion out there, although she came down pretty strongly yesterday and said it's April 30th.
It's going to be interesting because, you know, when we're scheduled to go back in session on the 28th.
Mm-hmm.
Now, everything I'm picking up from my colleagues is we're not going to go back on the 28th. I know you've been to Montgomery and you've seen the building we work in. It was an administrative building they tried to convert into a legislative building, and it's not designed for what it's being used for.
Right.
You can't socially distance. And how do you let the public in to watch us when you can't get 6 feet apart in that building?
Yeah, I don't. Do you think it's going to be another one where they'll gavel in to set a new date to reconvene?
We'll have to, but, you know, under the Constitution, we only have 105 days once we start to meet the 30 legislative days, and that clock's ticking.
Okay.
May 18th, no matter what happens, we adjourn, sign, and die, and everything dies right there.
But then it's going to be, it'll be special sessions, right? Or that's how you're going to do it.
We'll have to go back into extraordinary session. I mean, the budget chairman, three of the four budget chairmen are adamant they do not want to go in and try and pass a budget this session. They want to come back in special session because, you know, they don't know what this has done to the economy. You know, our taxes are directly linked to sales taxes and, you know, these other taxes. I mean, just think about this. Think of how much tax revenue the state of Alabama generates out of Baldwin County and our beaches. That's all shut down now.
Oh,
we don't know the impact it's going to have with all these restaurants and bars, everybody that's closed, all these small businesses, these retail shops, the impact it's going to have on our state yet.
Hey, and that's one of the things I want to get into. But technically, on the technical side, before we get into that, you can do budget in special session as long as you're done by the end of the fiscal year? Is that?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so now let's get into it. Let's get in the meat of it. I've been worried about this since the word go, Representative Pringle. A sales tax-based system here for the state. I mean, I understand we have property tax and other excise taxes, but sales tax is a big, big deal to the money that comes into Montgomery. And this is... I think this is going to be bigger than the decline the state saw during the BP oil spill by the end of it.
it probably will. This could mirror what happened to us in 2008 when we had to lay off 6,000 state employees because of the downturn in the economy and the financial hit the state took.
So do you see, that was proration, right? Was that the last of proration?
Oh, yeah.
Do you see proration coming back?
No, and I tell you why, because since the Republicans took control, we've been very good about putting aside money into our revolving accounts, our rainy day accounts, in order to prevent proration. And we've got some money aside for this year. We should be fine, but we've got to project. Next year's budget is projected off this year's income. I mean, it's always a guessing game when you're doing a budget is how much money you're going to make next year.
Well, I mean, I have a feeling that if, and I hope so, knock it on wood and I pray, so that the fundamentals of our economy, I think, are still there and very strong. If with virus, if we could wave a wand tomorrow and have the virus gone, we'd be wide open, wall to wall again. But, if we're in some kind of situation where one area is coming online before another one, it could be a slow start that we may not see. Yeah, but we may see these impacts, like you're saying, big time. And you don't want to expect that it's going to be more than it is, and then be the bearer of bad news twice, I guess, coming out of Montgomery.
Oh yeah, we do everything we can to avoid proration, because proration is the worst thing you can do to, particularly in education, your schools, because when you prorate, you usually wind up prorating in the last quarter of the year. So the proration, if you cut 10%, it's 10% of the last 25% of the year's budget. It's terrible. Wow. These agencies are trying to budget. But we're going to do everything we can. I mean, we've got some really good budget chairmen that are very fiscally conservative, but they will get us through it. But they all want to wait until they get a handle on what's happened to the tax revenue in the state before we go back in.
There's one part of this, of course, is the lack of revenue and how to budget off that. Will the discussion arise, would it arise during a special session, could it arise on new revenue streams? And where I'm going, will there be more pressure for lottery or something like that, saying, listen, we can't wait, we have got to get this done now because we need the revenue?
Yeah, but even if we pass, any type of gambling revenue has to have a constitutional amendment.
Sure, we could vote on it in November, though, right?
Sure, if you put it on the ballot then. The governor has far more power and control in a special session or an extraordinary session than a regular. If she calls us into extraordinary session, she will write down in the call, I'm convening you for this purpose or this purpose or this purpose, whatever it is. She delineates three things or five things or whatever. Well, it only takes a simple majority to pass those. Anything that's not in the call, you fall back to the BIR vote, where it takes the overwhelming majority to three-fifths vote of those voting in order to suspend the rules in order to bring a bill up.
Okay.
The reason why governors like extraordinary sessions is it gives them more power to pass their pet bills, because it only takes a simple majority.
Yeah, but if it was something on the spending side, I don't know that they could get. I mean, people talk about a Medicare expansion or something like that. I don't think even at a simple majority, the votes would be there for it. In this scenario, do you? Or do you think with all the possible money coming in for the state, $1.9 billion or whatever it is, that y'all would say yes?
To what?
Like an expansion of Medicaid.
Well, it depends on what funds. I mean, the whole expansion of Medicaid gets back to, and I've watched the entire proposal on expanding Medicaid and the economic growth and the economic benefit to the state of Alabama and all the jobs it'll create, but all the taxes generated by the expansion of Medicaid goes into the Education Trust Fund, and all the expense of expanding Medicaid comes out of the general fund. The general fund is broken.
And that's that same general fund that also funds corrections, right? And aren't we up against the wall here on this federal mandate, or do you think they're going to give us some breathing room because of what's going on?
They might give us some breathing room only because of what's going on, but that is going to cost the taxpayers a tremendous amount of money to solve the problem in our prisons right now, overcrowding and what's going on. Because the general fund, if you go back and look at the general fund, all it really is a drawdown fund.
Explain that to me. Yeah, explain that to me. A drawdown fund.
For like every dollar we spend of state taxpayers' money in the general fund, we draw down between 7 and 9 federal dollars, whether it be mental health or Medicaid Medicare or anything, we're using that highway department. We take the state general fund money and use it to draw down matching federal money. So if you cut $1 of state funding, you actually wind up cutting about $8 or $9 of what's being spent in the state of Alabama.
Yep. I know
that. And it is stretched to the max. We have jumped through every hoop, everything we can to maximize the amount of federal dollars we draw down.
Let's do this. Can you hold on? I got to run the news break. Can you hold on with me? Okay, we go to the news break. Come right back. More with Representative Chris Pringle. We're talking about a couple things they're going to be facing in Montgomery. One of the main ones is how do you budget going forward off a pandemic economy.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Look at the text coming in here. A lot of y'all saying that you would frequent the businesses that are civilly disobedient now or early openers. You said you'd frequent them during and after the stay-at-home order. Get your opinion on that on the text line at 343-0106, 343-0106. Continue our discussion with Representative Chris Pringle, District 101. And I want to. This is something you brought up to me the other day that I had not even thought about, because there's so many parts of this, so many moving parts to this, but legal ramifications from stay-at-home orders or a shutdown, right?
Yeah, they're all over the place right now.
Okay, give us examples. Like, what would be an issue?
Like, here's these water boards that have to meet, these small utilities that have to meet. You know, it's they have to meet, follow the public meetings rules, but they have to socially distance now. They can't vote remotely. They can't do it by teleconference. Now, here's another one. The rural electrics, all right? They are not governed under the Public Service Commission. But before they borrow money, they have to put a 30-day notification out they want to borrow money. And then they have to go before the state finance director and have a public hearing. Well, they all need to apply for some of these bank loans that are going to be forgiven because of the unemployment rate. They're afraid that a lot of their customers are not going to be able to pay their power bills, which is going to put them in a cash flow problem, which could cause them a problem trying to make payroll. And they don't have 30 days to advertise it. They're going to go try and borrow this money from the federal government that's putting out. Do you understand that it's a vicious cycle?
Do you think anybody would pursue that, though? I mean, if they did that and they didn't have the 30-day window, I mean, who would prosecute that?
Well, it's, you know, that's the question. Yeah, if there's so many of this, who's going to really say anything about it? But we need to put a provision in, and I've asked the speaker and I've asked the governor's office to appoint a special task force when we get back to look into the issues that have arisen because of this, legal ramifications, and let us pass bills that will address them. Much like we had to do when we went back that one day for 20 minutes, we had to adopt a joint resolution that allowed the speaker and the pro tem in the Senate to change our meeting date during a declared state of emergency. That bought us some time, because if we didn't do that, and every single day, they would have to go to the microphone and at 10 o'clock declare there not being a quorum, and we would have burned another legislative day. See, we only have 30 days we could meet over 105 calendar days. We were doing everything we can to try and save as many legislative days in case we could get back in order to address the problems we have to address. And we've got a lot of local bills that deal with economic development that are imperative that we get passed this session. You know, we'd like to do a budget, but I don't see us getting a budget out. I see us having to come back. Well, but there are a lot of legal issues that have to be addressed.
But I know there's a lot of what y'all do, and people are like, oh, they're only up in session for this. Like, y'all are working on this stuff. I know enough of y'all. You're working on this stuff even when you're not there in Montgomery. You just kind of go to Montgomery for parts of it. Do you think there would be a possibility of having something in an emergency situation like this, that not only would y'all do what you're doing now, working on these things, you could do some sort of, or is it bad to do an online vote or something like that in these special circumstances?
I don't believe in all-site voting for elected officials, for us, for the legislature. Some of these these small community water boards and stuff, that's fine. But for us, no. I think we need to physically be there. I think we need to be physically present. I think you'll see a move that during a declared state of emergency, that if we're out 30 days or 60 days, it's a stop point. It doesn't count on our 105 calendar days. So we can just put a stop to our calendar days and go back in afterwards and save it. But I think it's important that as a legislator, you need to be there. You need to be on the floor. You need to be in the committee meetings. You need to hear the debate. You need to be present in order to cast an informed vote.
As a man that has the experience you do in Montgomery, can you help us understand how the hierarchy works in the state when it comes to health departments and health officers over the executive branch? So Governor Ivey having the presser yesterday, but deferring to Dr. Scott Harris there. And you got these recommendations from the committee there in the Senate, along with the lieutenant governor that made the recommendations. You know, in the House, been talking about it. You heard from a federal delegation, Congressman Byrne, talking about the reopening. If the reopening was happening, could Governor Ivey override Scott Harris, or who makes the final call in whether we reopened or not?
Governor Ivey.
So even if the health, even if Scott Harris says, not saying she would, but if he says, I don't think this is right, she could say, tough, we're opening.
Yes. I mean, the cabinet's appointed, and they serve at the governor's pleasure. And, you know, and of course, I'm going to warn you that, you know, everything in Montgomery is political, and you've got people jockeying for position, and they're, you know, they want to be on TV, you know, pounding their fists saying we need to go back to work. You know, they want to look strong. But the governor has made it perfectly clear that she is going to allow this to be a data-driven decision and not a date-driven decision. She does not want to see us open prematurely and have this virus kick back up in the high gear and flood our hospitals. And of course, we're going to be better prepared now than we were originally because the supply chains are working much better.
Yeah, hospital situation. But the hospital situation looks, at least I can't say looks because I haven't seen it first hand, but it was Mayor Stimson the other day said for Mobile, the hospitals were under 50% capacity. I mean, but Governor Kemp was saying something similar for Georgia.
Oh, yeah. We did. What we're doing is working, but it's also causing problems because we suppressed the curve. You know, our hospitals are at 50% capacity. Well, they're running into some financial problems because they're not generating revenue. We shut down all elective surgeries. I mean, we're going to have to start seriously addressing whether we want, you know, to allow some of these elective surgeries to take place, because elective surgeries, you know, might not be important to you, but if you've got a bad hip or a bad knee, it's not really elective to you. you want to get that hip or knee replaced.
Yeah, it's a good point, because every time you say elective surgery, you know what I think about, Mercer. I think about facelifts.
Yeah, exactly. But
breast implants. That's where my mind goes.
Rotator cuffs, and there's all kinds of surgeries that people need, but you know they're not emergencies. And the hospitals are hurting, and we need to get our hospitals back open and our healthcare. You know, a lot of doctors' offices have just closed.
Yes. They're furlough. I mean, I was Slack y'all the other day. I had a physician on, and we were talking about COVID-19 and all that. And then just somewhere in the conversation, he said, well, you know, the way we've had to furlough people at the hospital, and it hadn't occurred to me to that point that they would. I said, really? So, you know, we're thinking about ramping up and having everybody on the ready in the hospital world, but they were furloughing.
Every dentist I know is closed. All their staff's laid off. You know, this is a lesson. This is a lesson in nothing. We should never have allowed China to control the production of essential products for this country. You know, we had a glove making plant, and I think it was Andalusia that went out of business a couple of years ago because they couldn't compete with the cheap stuff coming out of China. Well, I think people would be more than willing to pay for those latex gloves now out of Andalusia, and the mask and everything else. I think you're going to see the supply chain in the United States uptick and be able to supply us with what we need. And as soon as we get a lot of these PPEs and the test kits, I mean, the economy definitely needs to open.
Yeah, see, I want to kind of dual question here. Billy asked on the text line, what about getting money from the Porch Bandit Creek Indians here? I guess he's talking about the compact. Is a compact something you think will be discussed in a special?
If the governor puts it in the call, that's going to be a question. I mean, somebody will probably drop a bill for it, but you know, it's got to get over that legislative hurdle of the BIR vote. But that compact, you know, that what they were proposing was a one-time payment.
So, yes, and the other part of one-time payment, I guess it's one-time payment, is this discussion of the $1.9 billion that could be coming to the state. So does it come to the general fund? Does it come to the education trust fund? Where does that land? Who decides that?
I'm sure it's going to wind up in the general fund. And literally, the problem with so many of these loans, they're going to big corporations. We need to get money into the hands of these small business owners. You know, the people that own their own restaurant, the people that own their own, you know, the salons, whatever, they're the ones that need the money. And that's what we need to concentrate on right now, is getting these loans to the small businesses and not, you know, these large corporations that have access to unlimited accountants and lawyers that are swooping in and taking all the stimulus money.
Couldn't agree more. Representative Chris Pringle, thank you for your time. Thanks for being on the show. And once again, you said y'all are looking at the 28th, right? If that's going to gavel
that
back?
That was a day that was set. There will be a leadership meeting tomorrow in Montgomery where they're going to decide. And I'm thinking more and more is going to be pushed back until May before we go in.
We
need to get in and take care of the people's business. There's too much important legislation that can pass readily that we can clear the decks when we get into a special session. We don't have to go back and deal with a lot of the bills that have worked their way almost all the way through this process.
There we go. I appreciate your time. Up against the hard break here at the end of the hour, Representative District 101 Chris Pringle, always a pleasure. Coming right back, hour number two of Midday Mobile. We got history in the mix.